You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, starry starlets starving for startling facts about starfruit, starlings, and starfish. This is Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. Today's show is episode 82. And of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your kitschy kittens kiting for kitlings.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And no Chris today. He is in Portland at a retro gaming show again, another retro gaming show. Hopefully he'll sell a lot of or buy a lot of old video games and have some interesting tidbits and trivia.
He's a wheeler and dealer.
Yeah.
Wheeling and dealing.
Well, I'd like to start with a headline to share with you guys.
Oh.
Are you guys familiar with the biohacking movement?
Oh, is it where you plant random things like greenery?
Oh.
Interesting.
No, I think that's more like the guerrilla gardening.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Is it the like RFID chips that people
Yeah. Whoa. It's like people, there's a whole subculture or culture of people, you know, hacking your own body, extending human abilities through technology, basically.
Scary.
It does sound a little scary, and yet, you know, it's this great intersection of kind of DIY with home electronics and, you know, bordering on home surgery almost. But there was a story about a guy named Rich Lee. And the story that made the news is a particular project that he had performed on himself.
Like,
so what he did is he had magnets implanted in his ears. Okay. So, you know, the little flap of skin outside your ear, the tragus, you know, the part that a lot of people get piercings in. He had magnets inserted, one really small, powerful, responsive magnet in each tragus. He wears a wire coil around his neck that he can plug into his music player. So his MP3 player sends the signals to the wire coil that generates a magnetic field that drives the magnets in his ears. It's fundamentally the same technology from headphones that you would wear, but they are built into his body. So because the magnets in his ears just respond to a magnetic field stimulation, he can connect all kinds of things to this headphone jack that he wants. Like, he uses it for music, but he's talked about some of the other projects he's considered maybe in the future, like adding a proximity detector that feeds signals in, and he could be like Daredevil or a bat where they'll vibrate based on his proximity to things.
Oh, that's like those things built into cars when you back up in reverse.
Yeah. So he could theoretically navigate in the dark.
Are there other examples of other projects that people
have? More than one person who have implanted RFID chips in their hands.
For,
you know,
what?
So, for example, the most common use is you might be a researcher at a lab where you have an RFID to control the door. And so instead of taking out your card key out of your wallet, you just put your hand up against the sensor and it triggers, you know. There are some people who have experimented with just putting small magnets in their hands or their fingers as a way of controlling magnetic devices, or also just as a way of adding a new sense. Part of the biohacking movement
away from your monitor because
really,
you might screw it up.
Yeah, or handling your credit cards.
You're like, what happened? Serious solutions.
Well,
for very simple activities.
It's part of a larger philosophy, though. I mean, it really is a movement of trying to redefine what it means to be human and kind of extending, you know, it's, you know, some people believe it. Anything that we can do to enhance our abilities, why not?
Before we start our quizzing, I want to share some cool community achievements, I would say. Special shout out to two people. Jesse wrote us on Facebook and she said this: I am on the University of Michigan solar car team. I am currently in Darwin, Australia, awaiting 8 a.m. tomorrow for the beginning of the World Solar Challenge race.
Awesome.
From here, Darwin, to Adelaide across the outback.
Oh, I think I read about that.
She said, just want to let you guys know that sometimes the desert gets boring, even with a solar car, and I've gotten a few teammates hooked on Good Job, Ray. Love the podcast.
Aww.
What a cool
thing.
That
is really cool.
That is awesome.
Well, good luck.
What can it already happened.
Oh, hope it went well.
And I have another one, and this is from a couple weeks ago. Scott emailed us, and he said, I was listening to your podcast while on my climb of Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania. I think it's the highest mountain in Africa and the highest freestanding mountain in the world.
Ah, You mean, meaning not part of a range?
Yeah.
Ah.
Okay. So Everest.
Everest is
Yeah,
because
Everest
range.
Is part of a range.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, that's a good trivia stat. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Super, super awesome. And thank you for listening to our podcast. Without further ado, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hot Shot. Colin versus Dana. So I have a random Trivial Pursuit card here from the box. Here we go. Blue wedge for geography. What South American country boasts a huge underground cathedral carved entirely from salt? Oh, Colin.
Country?
Yeah. Country.
I'll guess Brazil.
Incorrect. That is a big country.
Yeah.
Venezuela.
Incorrect. It is Colombia.
Huh.
It's called the Salt Cathedral of Zipaquirá.
Huh.
That sounds so cool. I'm going to go look at pictures of it.
In a former salt mine.
Huh.
Yeah.
I'm going to go visit it and lick it.
Pink wedge for pop culture. Name the 5 official film ratings of the Motion Picture Association of America.
Oh.
You can work together if you want to.
Okay.
PG. PG-13.
Right.
R. NC-17.
Yes!
Yeah.
Good job.
I was like, are there going to be any trick ones? No, no trick ones.
All right. Yellow wedge. What Japanese city is synonymous with efforts to stem global warming?
It was where they signed the Kyoto.
Correct.
Yeah, the Kyoto Accord.
Yes.
Right.
Very good. Purple wedge. What company known for speed has an arrow hidden in its logo? Everybody.
FedEx.
It is FedEx. If you look closely, you can see the arrow. I believe it's between the big E and the small X.
And it's one of those things where once you have it pointed out to you, you're like, how did I never see that?
Yeah. It can never be unseen. I don't know if it's a happy accident or maybe it was designed that way.
No, I think it was on purpose.
It was on purpose?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Green wedge for science. What does a basilisk do to earn its nickname, Jesus Christ Lizard?
These are the lizards that can walk on water?
Yes.
Is that right? Yeah.
So how it works is they have pockets of air under its fast-moving feet.
So basilisk in D&D, like, they turn you to stone. They don't talk about them running on water. And I didn't think they were real. So it's like, I don't know why it's the Jesus Christ lizard. It seems very controversial. Because it's not real. What?
Actually, before this question, I didn't know it was a real thing, too. I was like, oh, it's in Harry Potter.
Yeah.
It's D&D, and it's in World of Warcraft. All right, last question. Orange wedge. What women's sport has 5 players on a side divided into blockers, jammers, and pivots?
Oh.
Quidditch.
Women's sport has blockers, jammers, and pivots. Is it roller derby?
Yes, yeah. Roller derby. Good job, brains. So this week, I guess it's kind of a coincidence that you shared that headline. So this week we decided to talk about weird ways or maybe common ways that people change their bodies. So this week we're talking about body modifications. So I want to ask you guys, what body modifications do you guys have? Dana?
I have pierced ears.
Okay.
I have caps on my teeth.
Oh, that counts. Yeah. Oh, I guess that does count.
Yeah.
Got ear piercing as well. I wore braces, so I guess orthodontics counts, right?
Yeah.
Same.
I got that one. Yeah.
That's a body modification.
That sounds so much cooler when you call it a body modification.
Oh, you mean braces? No, I was biohacking, guys.
Yeah, I biohacked my teeth.
I myself have a couple of tattoos. I have 4 tattoos. Used to dye my hair blue, body mod.
Yeah, I used to dye my hair. I guess that counts. I don't anymore.
I wasn't allowed to dye my hair.
Oh.
Say it like that.
In line with the theme of body modification and change and transformation, I have put together a quiz for you guys about body modification in fictional characters.
Oh.
Okay.
So it could be from a variety of media, and I will tell you a little bit about the character, a little bit of a hint, and you tell me what character I'm talking about.
Huh.
So here we go. I'm glad I have that reaction from you, Karen. Yeah. You haven't been thinking about it leading up till now.
Well, no, like even if you just, can you think of a famous character that, you know, has, I was like, I can't, maybe well, like some tattoos.
Let's get started.
Let's get started.
Implants,
right? Yeah.
So each of you guys will be writing down your answer and we will be reading them both out and see who, maybe both of you are correct. This comic book superhero has had extensive body modifications, with the most prominent laying alongside his radius and ulna.
Alongside?
Don't overthink it.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. And answers up. Dana says Wolverine. Yes, indeed. Karen says Iron Man. Tony Stark. No, Wolverine. The claws, of course, laying alongside the two bones of your forearm.
Yeah.
The radius and the ulna.
Yeah. I was like, what covers what character has like arms? Darn.
Yes, right. And his body modification, in case you have never read Wolverine or seen the movies, he has a skeleton laced with metal and metal claws.
What's the name of the metal?
Adamantium. I'm so glad you asked. I already know that.
You can't spell adamantium without This popular character from TV and movies made daily use of a device known as the visual instrument and sensory organ replacement.
Wait, say it again. Visual.
Visual instrument and sensory organ replacement. What character am I looking for here? Popular character, TV and movies. All right, answers up. Karen says Batman. Dana says, yes, Geordi LaForge.
Oh, from Star Trek.
Yes, from Star Trek Next Generation. Yes, Geordi LaForge, blind from birth, but had his cool electronic device spoke directly to his brain. Yeah, he was in the movies.
Did that acronym spell out visor?
It does spell out visor.
Yeah. With an A, though. Visor.
You have to leave out the A. Yeah, visual instrument sensory organ replacement. Although I have read that this was only mentioned in some of the novelizations, that they never actually said this acronym on the show.
Okay. It does spell advisor.
I was like, who would do that? Oh, I think it's probably Star Trek.
Yeah. This South African-born filmmaker has directed two feature films, both of which rely heavily on themes of body modification.
What's his name?
I'll take close enough answers.
Can I say what the name of his movie is?
Of course, sure, for bonus points, absolutely.
I wanted the original point.
Wait, are we writing down movies too?
Sure, there's three possible points here. We're looking for the filmmaker and both of the movies he's directed.
Okay.
Feature films. All right, answers up.
Karen, that's his name, yes.
Neil Blomkoffels. Oh, very, very close. Very close. And Dana?
District 9 guy.
District 9 guy. All right, together. Like... Together, you guys are like 70% of the way there. I am looking, of course, for Neil Blomkamp.
Oh!
Okay.
Yes.
Not Blomkoffels.
Blomkoffels. That sounds like a tasty dish, though.
It's District 9 and Elysium.
District 9 and Elysium, yes. Mm-hmm. District 9, of course, without giving away any spoilers for either of those movies, yes. They both revolve around body transformation, body enhancement.
Oh.
I've got a really bad riddle for you guys here. No wordplay, just a bad riddle.
Sure.
What do Darth Vader and a crocodile have in common?
Ooh.
Think about a very particular crocodile named TikTok.
Oh, from Captain Hook.
Yes.
TikTok, the crocodile, ate Captain Hook's hand.
Yes.
And
Darth Vader took off Luke Skywalker's hand.
Somebody's hand.
All right. For one bonus point here.
All right.
You guys got to tell me, which hand is Captain Hook missing and which hand is Luke Skywalker missing?
Ooh.
So you got 50-50 for each one.
Okay. I'm thinking, okay.
I mean the classic Disney representation of Captain Hook. Well, I guess they're both Disney characters now, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, all these make good pub trivia.
Answers up.
Whoa,
we flipped it.
You guys flip-flopped it. Dana is correct. Captain Hook is missing his left hand. Luke Skywalker is missing his right hand.
Oh.
And they, of course, both had them replaced with prosthetics on very opposite ends of the technology spectrum.
from
literally just a hook all the way up to a fully cybernetic hand.
Yeah.
Martin Caden's 1972 novel, Cyborg, was the basis for this TV secret agent who worked for the fictional government agency OSI.
Oh!
Wait a minute. Ugh, I'm so sad. I don't have a guess because OSI...
is in Venture Brothers,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's from... isn't that... That's the only reference I have for it. I don't know. Blank.
Oh, blank for Dana.
Oh,
Inspector Gadget, not a bad guess.
Oh,
no,
it's not?
No,
I was so sure.
The $6 Million Man, Steve Austin.
Oh, the would be so cool if Inspector Gadget was inspired by Cyborg.
So let's move on here. This animated crime fighter was the bane of the evil organization known as MAD. M-A-D.
Oh, that sounds so familiar.
All right. Answers up. Karen says Inspector Gadget. Dana says Inspector Gadget. Yes, it is Inspector Gadget.
Yeah, I had no idea. I was like, I'm just going to put what I put in the last question.
Dr. Claude.
And they have confirmed he is a cyborg. He's not a robot. We are supposed to believe that he is a person.
Part human.
Yes, who's been retrofitted with all these devices.
Because Penny's his niece.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good point. Good point, Dana.
Thank you. I thought about
all
this
that
moment.
Research.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought this up.
All right, last one here.
Check out my fan fiction
for more details.
All right, last one. Here we go. This Academy Award-winning movie from 1986 featured the main character undergoing a transformation into a Musca Domestica.
Oh. 1986, though.
The transformation was pretty gross in this movie.
I do know.
Oh, that was the hint you guys needed. Was gross.
No. I wrote something else, and then it triggered another thought.
Okay.
All right. Answers up.
Oh, I don't think it's...
Ready?
All right.
Dana says The Fly.
Yeah.
Oh, Karen says American Werewolf in London.
Interesting.
Nice.
Yeah, we both had Metamorphosis on there.
Yeah,
I crossed it out.
Metamorphosis.
I was like a beetle. No, there was a fly. And then you're like, what's the werewolf?
All right. Well done.
Nice.
So it seems like we're talking a lot about stuff that gets added to your body. But I want to talk about actually just changing the shape of your body. So there is... a species. Oh, I have to say this. I came across this first. Astute listeners would know I really like Disneyland.
Yeah.
And I also, I don't know if you can tell, but I play World of Warcraft a lot. I mentioned it on the show. I'm always like, that sounds like World of Warcraft. In World of Warcraft, there's these daily quests that you do, and you can fish. And that's like mostly what I do now in World of Warcraft is I fish. And sometimes you get weird fish, and you turn it in for gold or whatever. And there's this one thing called the mimic octopus. And I thought it was like a fairy tale animal. I didn't know it was real until I read more about it. So it is a real thing. So I'm sure you guys probably came across videos or images or heard or read about octopi or species of octopus changing colors. You know, when they're scared or something or defense mechanism, they would change from like black to white or white to black. And it's very reactive. The mimic octopus, which is the species name, not only changes color, but it changes the shape of their body with their tentacles to look like other animals.
Oh.
In addition to the color changing thing, I've actually talked about how they change color is very similar to how chameleons change color in terms of the science. And I actually talked about that in our color episode. So the mimic octopus is the only known aquatic species to be able to mimic not only one other sea creature, but multiple animals. They can shape themselves to look like up to 15 different animals.
Whoa.
Outside of octopuses.
It does impressions.
They're smart enough to know what animal shape to turn into based on their situation.
Oh.
But the mimic octopus is actually rather small. It's like maybe 2 feet long. Uh-huh. So it can impersonate a lot of smaller animals. So one of the animals they can do is lionfish. They're stripey and they're really spiky.
Yeah, they're kind of spindly. Spines. Yeah.
Yeah. So the mimic octopus would change and turn its tentacles to look upright and straight to look like thorns or spines coming out from the lionfish. And then the color, like red and white stripes, and it looks from far away, looks like a lionfish, but it's an octopus. And another thing they do is sometimes they would hide in reefs or, under the sand, and they would leave a couple of tentacles out, and it would look like sea snakes. And the colors would look like the bands of sea snakes. They can basically flatten their whole body or turn all of its tentacles and lay it on one side so it looks like a flat fish.
Okay.
It looks like an actual one piece of fish. Uh-huh. But it's just all the body parts jammed together.
Just like in a disc almost.
Yeah. That's
really cool. Don't researchers say that octopus are supposed to be a really smart animal?
It kind of freaks me out how smart they are. They can do aggressive mimicry to catch prey. So sometimes they would transform into a shape of a crab and lure other crabs thinking that it's a mate and then eat the crab.
Oh man. Look at that huge big crab.
Oh, that's so sexy.
Big crab. Oh.
nom.
Yeah.
And there is a connection. A lot of these animals that the mimic octopus turns into are poisonous.
Right. Okay.
Which there's not a lot of study. This species was only discovered in the 1990s. And so it might be because the octopus itself doesn't produce poison. So it's mimicking other things that have poison to be like a defense mechanism.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And things that other animals are conditioned to avoid just on sight.
The ocean is full of monsters.
Yes.
It's full of crazy monsters.
Smart monsters that will trick you.
There could be one here right now.
I know. Is that really Colin or Mimic Octopus?
I wonder, though, if they have group behavior, if they're multiple mimic octopi that they can band together and make, like, a bigger animal.
Like a Voltron?
Yeah, like a Voltron. Not only are they Transformers, they're a Voltron into, like, a giant, I don't know, they can look like an anchor or look like, I don't know, like something. That'd be crazy.
I love
like a
that.
Shark.
Yeah.
A shark. Yeah.
And yes, that is the new nightmare animal, is the mimic octopus.
That is
You're
pretty
welcome.
Creepy. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Karen. I have something maybe a little lighter and less scary than that. So celebrities be getting tattoos all the time. And it comes up for us in trivia sometimes. We have to identify celebrities by their tattoos.
We had one 3 weeks ago, yeah. 2 weeks ago.
Mina Savari has a big old lion on the back of her neck. Who knew? Yeah, but we lost the point. So this is to maybe help you guys get a little more familiar with what tattoos people have.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. So you guys will work together and see if you can puzzle it out.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So this pop singer has more than a dozen tattoos, almost 20, I think, including the word love that's inside of her ear, the words just breathe on her chest, a dream catcher, Roman numerals, and a Theodore Roosevelt quote.
Rihanna.
I was going to say Rihanna, but those don't sound like things.
Oh, wait. No. It's not. Sorry. Miley Cyrus.
Oh.
Yes.
Miley Cyrus.
It is Miley Cyrus.
Okay.
Because the Theodore Roosevelt quote is like, basically, it's just haters gonna hate.
That sounds like something that he would say, actually. Yeah, yeah, I can see him saying that.
So this Canadian singer has tattoos of a crown, Roman numerals, the Japanese kanji symbol for music, praying hands, and the Hebrew word for Jesus.
Wow.
And a big old picture of Jesus.
Canadian singer. Celine Dion, maybe?
Wait, is it a lady?
No.
Michael Bublé?
That would be funny.
That'd be great if it were Michael Bublé.
Canadian
singer.
It's a guy from Nickelback.
He's a single performer. He performs by himself. He also plays.
Oh, is it what? Justin Bieber?
Yes.
Oh, man.
I forgot that he was Canadian.
I thought he was from YouTube. The land of YouTube. YouTubia.
Yeah.
This actress has the words lucky you with a horseshoe on her rib cage. She also has two circles with the letter A on her right ankle, a colored sunrise on her left forearm, and an I Heart New York charm bracelet on her right wrist.
Tattooed on her?
Yes.
Oh, is it?
Must be from New York.
Is it Angelina? I guess we would have noticed the tattoo on her forearm.
I definitely saw the Lucky You tattoo with the horseshoe on her ribcage in Gossip Stuff recently. Huh. It looks a little homemade.
Oh, and Colin, you should be good at this.
I have another hint for you guys. She won a Tony for her performance in A View from the Bridge recently.
Showing my ignorance of the Tonys.
It is Angelina Jolie.
No.
Still no.
It is Scarlett Johansson.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, okay. Huh.
While on the South American leg of her tour, this singer got a tattoo of a RTO, and the T might be also a cross, on her neck. And it was derived from the signatures of three of her fans. And they were all from different neighborhoods, and they were different ages.
Whoa, that's intense.
That's kind of cool, though.
Yeah, so somebody...
It's got to be somebody who... Is that Rihanna? I'll guess that's Rihanna. Because, yeah. She's already got so many tattoos. What's another small one? I don't know.
What stars really couldn't... Oh, Lady Gaga.
It is, yes.
What musician is super connected with their fans?
That's good thinking.
She got a tattoo of Little Monsters after she won, I think, some Grammys. And she has... I was going to tell you another tattoo she has, which is a unicorn with a banner wrapped around it that says, Born This Way. This actor got YOLO, Y-O-L-O, You Only Live... Which probably stands for You Only Live Once. I'm assuming that's what he would mean it to me.
I've been told by the young ones.
Well, that's what it means to other people. I don't know what it means to him. He got it tattooed on his hand, and Simon Cowell offered him a record contract, but he turned it down because acting was his main priority at the time.
Well, is that Drake? I mean, because he was an actor, right?
No.
Mm. Yeah, but I
guess Simon Cowell, though, that wouldn't have lined up.
Yeah, his breakthrough role was on the Disney Channel as Troy Bolton.
Zac Efron?
Yes.
Oh!
From High School Musical, yes. Among the tattoos on her body, this actress has the Tennessee Williams quote, "A prayer for the wild at heart kept in cages."
Is this Angelina Jolie?
Yes. She also has a Cambodian prayer on her body and seven lines of geographical coordinates.
Yeah, that sounds sufficiently dramatic.
Oh, that's cool to have coordinates tattooed on your body.
Yeah.
It's like it's a clues.
Yes. Six of them are for where her kids were born or where she first.
That's cool. I like that.
And one is for Jolie's lost treasure.
And then the seventh one is where Brad Pitt was born.
Aww. I want the Jolie treasure.
Jolie's gold.
Yeah. Cool. Good job, you guys.
All right.
Oh, man. That was rough.
That was, and Rihanna didn't pop up at all. It was like
Rebel Fleur. We always get that question in trivia. We always get
Yeah.
So did you guys know that people used to use pee as a mixing agent to mix tattoo dyes, and then they would tattoo it into your body?
No.
So you would have pee in your skin.
Why?
Interesting.
I just saw that in the tattoo museum website. I was like, interesting.
I'm here for my tattoo. Okay, fill up this cup, please.
Oh, you put your own pee on it.
Yeah. Oh, it's a nice personal touch.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break, and we have our recurring segment, Brainiacs Book Club, where we share our favorite nonfiction Goodreads picks that you can get as an audiobook on Audible. And Colin, what'd you pick?
I picked a book called Emergency by Neil Strauss. And I like this book because it's sort of a survivalist guide for
when
everything goes bad. So he takes the idea of what would he do if things really turned bad in the world or his life,
and the poop hits the fan.
You go. I was trying to find a clean way to say that, and you
poop.
Yes, thank you. I forgot. So it covers everything from he goes and meets with doomsday scenario survivalists to people who teach him how to get fraudulent IDs and where to stash your money and how to get out of the country, how to live in the wild, how to make your own ghillie suit, how to just everything that you would need.
What's a ghillie suit?
It's like what the snipers wear, kind of the shaggy looking suit.
Look like a bush.
To how to hide assets if you need it. So it's a guide to
become a criminal or get away.
It's a set of tools. It's a set of tools and skills that you can decide how you want to apply those skills. Read by the author himself.
Cool. Neil Strauss sounds familiar. Did he? What other stuff did he write?
Yeah, he's written a couple other books. He wrote The Game, which was about like pickup culture.
Exposing.
Yeah.
But also how to.
Again, it's how do you want to approach it? It's laying out a set of techniques, and it's up to you to decide, is this an expose or is this a how-to guide?
Pickup artist.
The full title of the book is The Game, Penetrating the Secret Society of Pickup Artists.
Oh, scandalous.
It was very scandalous and in the best possible way, trashy.
All right, so I have a pick, and it's called What Einstein Told His Cook. Kitchen Science Explained. It's a little bit of a misnomer because it's not really Mr. Einstein. It's kind of just like what a science guy told his cook. You know what I mean? But right. It's catchier.
It's a smart person.
A smart person. Yeah. Not actually Einstein. Trivia, burning questions you have about everyday stuff. How do they actually decaffeinate coffee? Why are there so many different types of salt? Mm. Why is there kosher salt? Why is there iodized salt? Why are there sheep differently? Does it actually make a difference? Trivia explained, you know, science explained in funny and colorful ways.
What Einstein told his gynecologist.
Yeah.
Is
he? Is that your area?
Wait a minute. And of course, all of our picks, Emergency, and What Einstein Told His Cook will be on our website under Brainiac's Book Club on the nav, and you can click it and see all of our recommendations.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
So I don't know. It's funny because we've done a show before entirely dedicated to torture.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Like reading some of the stuff about body modification makes me just feel weird. It gives me like the heebie-jeebies. And I was looking into the historic roots of plastic surgery. And I mean, it's probably not a surprise that a lot of the roots of plastic surgery stem from war.
Right.
Because of like war disfiguration. And then I came across this one line and it just creeped me out. In 1892, Robert Weir experimented unsuccessfully with xenografts.
Which is what?
Xenografts are basically a grafting skin or parts of the body.
Uh-huh.
From a different species.
So
the actual operation that he was working on is for sunken noses. He would graft duck sternum and then fill it in to sunken noses. So it's not like a whole body part, you know, shoved in or whatever. But
okay.
Just the fact that there is a word for grafting procedures from other species, xenografts. It's like,
I thought you meant like he put a monkey paw on his left hand or something like that. Okay, all right.
So I have a quick quiz. It's kind of like a vocabulary quiz. I have formal names of major plastic surgery procedures.
Mm.
And I want you guys to write on a notepad.
Okay.
What body part do you think the procedure is for?
All right.
So for example, rhinoplasty is, everybody?
For the nose.
For the nose.
Like rhinoceros, rhino is nose. Okay. Brachioplasty. B-R-A-C-H-I-O. P-L-A-S-T-Y. Brachioplasty. Mm-hmm. Answers up. Dana says throat / neck. And then Colin says neck lift. It is actually arm. Arm lift.
Oh, like brasso.
Okay. I know. I was thinking, at first I thought it was neck too. I was like, oh, that seems weird.
I was thinking like brachiosaurus.
Yeah.
Yep. What is otoplasty? Otoplasty. Answers up. Dana says chin, and Colin says ears. Ears is correct. Ears. The most common procedure is ear pinning. Mm. So if your ears are forward, you can pin the ears back. That counts as one of the otoplasty procedures.
Okay.
All right, next one. Rhytidectomy. Rhytidectomy. R-H-Y-T-I-D-E-C-T-O-M-Y. Rhytidectomy. It's like a spelling bee.
I'm just going to make up a body part.
Yeah, do it. So Dana says calf. Colin says eyes. It is facelift. I can't think of a general word for face that I can easily associate with rhytidectomy.
But that's the technical name.
That is the technical name for facelift.
Okay. That's a good one to know.
All right. No. This one is abdominoplasty. Dana says Tiffany?
Tummy tuck.
Oh, tummy tuck.
Or abdominals.
Tiffany tuck. And then Colin says tummy tuck. Yes, it is tummy tuck. Reshaping and firming of the abdomen. Blepharoplasty. Blepharoplasty. B-L-E-P-H-A-R-O-P-L-A-S-T-Y. Here's a hint. It's probably the most common unpopular procedure in the world.
Well, that may have changed my answer, but I already wrote it down.
Okay. Colin, what's your answer? Chin/chin dimple. Oh, to actually make the chin.
Yeah,
cleft.
I don't know. I was thinking something around there. But when you said it's the most, yeah, I don't think that's, I have no confidence in my answer anymore.
Dana says boobs. It is eyelid surgery. This is the
most popular in the world.
One of the most popular in the world. This is a procedure done actually in a lot of Asian nations, is to make the crease. The crease of the eyelid. But this also includes tattooing permanent eyeliner to your eyes as well, which a lot of cultures do.
Blepharoplasty.
Blepharoplasty. All right, and last one, we can just yell it out. Mammoplasty.
Boobs.
Boob job. Well, very good. Now you learn some vocabulary and bits about plastic surgery and xenografts.
Do you think sometimes people get parts of a pig's heart or a cow's heart? Mm-hmm. Is that a xenograft or
graft? Yep.
Yeah,
it
that
counts.
Would count. Right.
It
right.
counts. Pigs and baboons.
Baboons.
Mm-hmm.
How many baboons are there?
I think scientists have said that chimpanzees are very close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But chimpanzees are close to being endangered. So they're more baboons. I don't know.
Sure. Sorry, baboons.
Yeah.
I read somewhere that they were jerks. So I don't know if that makes it better.
I got this baboon butt transplant.
I know.
That's a weird doctor. I would like a baboon butt.
Get out of my office. Well, I'd also like to talk about surgeries and surgery names, a surgery that has a very specific common name and a very specific technical name.
Okay.
So if that's not an obscure enough intro.
I'm like, all right, so there are two names.
So what are you talking about? So I know you guys are not big baseball fans in particular, sports fans, really.
I like baseball food.
Okay.
Yeah, I like going to baseball games.
Okay. So I'm willing to guess that you guys have not heard of Tommy John.
Sure.
That sounds like a gangster.
It does sound like a gangster's
name. Sean Puffy Combs.
Sean John.
Sean, okay.
So I'm sure that we have some listeners out there who are, oh yes, Tommy John, I know, nodding along. I will get to share the story of Tommy John with you two here. That is his name, yes. Oh, okay. Tommy John, he was an actual baseball player. He played mainly in the 60s, 70s. He was a left-handed pitcher, which are particularly prized among pitchers. He debuted with the Cleveland Indians in 1963, played for a few teams over the next few years. Starting in 1972, he was with the Dodgers, the LA Dodgers, and really started to have some impressive seasons put together, making a name for himself. And
yeah, I understand everything so far.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
No, I know sports.
Yeah, I know what the Dodgers means.
Yeah.
He was doing really well. He was having a great season in 1974, and when he sustained serious damage to his ulnar collateral ligament. And
on his left hand.
On his pitching arm. That's right. On his pitching arm. That's right. The UCL, the ulnar collateral ligament, is the little bit of the ligament that connects your upper arm, the humerus, with your ulna. And as you can imagine, for a pitcher, this is comes in use a lot. The UCL damage is a big deal if you're a pitcher. We as humans, you know, we're not really meant to be throwing spears 90 miles an hour. You know, we're not, this isn't a behavior that we're really that well designed for over the long haul.
When you put it that way, though, it's pretty awesome. Like, oh, human can throw something 90 miles per hour.
Indeed. Yeah. It was a common injury among pitchers, just overuse, and the ligament will get frayed or torn or damaged. And if you sustain serious enough damage, you know, it could be career ending. One of the Dodgers team physicians was a man named Dr. Frank Job, and he pioneered the first UCL reconstruction surgery. So he and Tommy John, you know, got together and basically like, you know what? I think we can do this. I don't think this has to be the end of your career.
Has there been attempts before?
No. This was revolutionary at the time.
I would think if somebody...
Well, someone's got to be the first, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's true.
And it's, you know, it's really an injury that if he weren't a major league pitcher, he might be able to get by with rehabilitation and rest. But in order to continue his career throwing balls at high speeds with great accuracy,
Got it.
So they decided, no, we're going to go ahead with UCL reconstruction. And it was successful. And basically how the procedure works is, you know, he opens up his elbows, his elbow, his pitching elbow.
I was like, both of them, just for fun.
Right.
Like...
Well, he did have to have surgery on both arms because what they do for this procedure is they drill two little holes, one in the humerus, one in the ulna. Uh-huh. They took a tendon from his opposite arm. So they took a tendon from his right forearm.
Okay.
And what they do is they went in and they essentially weave the tendon as a replacement or a patch for the UCL in a figure eight pattern, actually. And so it connects the two bones.
It's like a rubber band.
With a new tendon. Yeah. Now, again, you know, this was the first time this had been done. Dr. Job at the time said he figured that Tommy John had about a 1% chance of this rehabilitating him to his former strength. So now this is a big deal. He took off the entire 1975 season to let the surgery heal up. And he came back for the 1976 season. And, you know, a lot of people are like, well, how's this going to go? And it went pretty well. He came back and within a season or two was pitching at or near the level he was pitching before.
Wow.
He, in fact, went on to have more victories after the surgery than he had before the surgery. So now technical medical name is, as I say, ulnar collateral ligament reconstruction surgery, but it is now known as Tommy John surgery. So once the rest of the league saw how successful this surgery could be, everyone's like, well, wait a minute. This doesn't necessarily need to be the end of someone's career. We can go have Tommy John surgery and they can be on the mound again in a year or so, pitching again at the same level, maybe even higher. There are a lot of cases that pitchers come back throwing harder than before they had the
surgery.
Because
it's still less used compared to their other
maybe
arm.
Or they practice a lot now and do lots of exercise.
You know, it's funny that you say that, Dana. So Dr. Job, that is his opinion on why in the cases of pitchers being able to throw harder after the surgery, he maintains it's that they're more focused on rehabilitation and strength training. Here's where it gets into sort of an interesting medical ethical issue. You guys can maybe imagine that
if
there is a surgery available that might make me throw harder, this is going to be an inducement for people to want to have it done preemptively. And in fact, that's exactly what has happened over the years.
But what about your other arm? Your other arm is one short.
It's a tendon from the forearm.
They don't take
the other ligament.
Yeah.
Yeah. They can also do it from cadavers. It doesn't have to be from the same patient, although it typically is. Okay. So it gets into this weird area where sports doctors and sports surgeons report people coming to them and saying, I'd like to have Tommy John surgery done. There's nothing wrong with my UCL now. I want to have it done as a preemptive or maybe even an enhancement to essentially hack my body. And is this ethical to perform a procedure on someone who doesn't
need it? So what's the word?
Well, most doctors, at least on the record, will not do this. No, most doctors will say, no, I'm not going to perform this surgery on you. I mean, so now I should say, like, in the years since they pioneered the surgery, the success rate is actually fairly high. It's around 90%.
Wow.
So that's a pretty high success rate for a sports surgery.
As in
coming back to
same
at or above.
It
is so common a procedure that this is from a report done by a Bleacher Report just last year. 1/3 of current major league pitchers have had Tommy John surgery.
Wow.
Interesting.
And that's assuming they had actual UCL problems and received.
Right. That's right. In the decades since Tommy John surgery was invented, hundreds and hundreds of pitchers, I mean, at all levels, I mean, primarily major leagues, but there are college, level pitchers who have had it done.
But that also means this condition is very, prevalent among pitchers, too.
It really is. And, you know, they've started at youth levels of baseball in recent years. They've started limiting the number of pitches that young players throw as an effort to try and prevent this from developing later on. Mm-hmm. But there are some troubling stories of, you know, I mean, there's the stereotypical sports parent, the overbearing sports parent. There are stories, unfortunately, of doctors being approached by parents of, hey, doc, you know, maybe you can juice up Junior's arm and give him the Tommy John surgery. And again, no serious physician would agree to do this preemptively, but the pressure is out there. As you can see, you know, it's a world of sports. You know, any advantage you can get, even if it's perceived, as I say, Dr. Job, the man who pioneered this procedure, he says he thinks it's crazy. He's like, I would never do this for somebody preemptively.
This was a last resort.
That's right. Yeah. To save his career,
like
which
nothing
it did.
To lose, really.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as you can still use your arm, you don't really have, you're like, well, I won't have a career anymore.
Yeah.
For sure. If I don't do it.
It is an enhancement, but it's not like a substance you take. This is taking one part of your body and putting it in the other part of your body. It's from you.
Right.
Technically.
Right. Right. Yeah. And even in its best case scenario, there's still a chance that you might have nerve damage.
Yeah,
I mean, it carries a lot of risks with it, like any surgery does. Mm-hmm. There is at least one pitcher who never needs to worry about blowing out his UCL, because there is a pitcher named by the name of R.A. Dickey, and he was born with no UCL. He does not have an ulnar collateral ligament.
Right. So, and he can still pitch.
He can still pitch. And it's one of those things where, like, the experts, they're like, he shouldn't be able to pitch, let alone at a major league level.
Wow.
And so here's one of the reasons that he's been so successful is that his signature pitch is the knuckleball. So his signature pitch is the pitch that puts the least amount of strain on your arm. You're throwing it really slow and using movement to fool the batter. But he is an example of, even without a ulnar collateral ligament, you can still go on and be a successful major league pitcher. But
that's weird.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
All right, time for our last non-topic quiz segment. I devised a surprise quiz. I didn't tell you guys what it's about, but now I will.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of listeners, you might know that we all play in a pub trivia team for about 5 years.
Mm.
So sometimes questions will pop up that we've seen before. And most of the time, those are questions that we still don't know or did not remember what the answer was. And we're like, oh my God, we had this question before. What is it? And why can't I remember? So here I've compiled some questions that we've gotten wrong repeatedely. And I want to see if you guys can get it right.
All right. Well, I think we should work together.
Yeah, let's work together.
Because that's the more accurate.
Okay.
More like pub quiz. Yeah.
All right.
It'll minimize the shame when we get it
too. Yeah, you're right. It's better.
So here we go. On October 3rd, 1992, Sinead O'Connor appeared on Saturday Night Live as a musical guest, where she infamously tore up a picture of Pope John Paul II during her performance. What song was she singing?
It wasn't Nothing Compares to You.
I don't think it was. I think that's what we've put before. Or see, this is where this is where we like start. Oh wait, was it the right answer or the wrong answer?
Does she have any other songs?
Well, I mean, it would have been, at the time.
This is like actually a really good reenactment. Or you know,
this is really how we talk about it.
I'm just, you know, blanking on, I mean, she had a lot of songs off that album, but let's just go with the safe answer.
Is it nothing compared to, which is what we've always said and has always been wrong.
With that.
You're incorrect again.
What is their song?
Here's a hint. It was a cover of a Bob Marley song.
One Love? Was it Redemption Song?
No. It's not. It was War. The song was War.
See, this is why we don't remember. All right.
Now
War.
Not Nothing Compares to You.
Okay.
Here's the next question. What NFL National Football League team was the first to lose 2 Super Bowls?
We just had this.
It was the Vikings.
Yes.
I feel confident. I feel confident that it was the Minnesota Vikings.
Correct.
Okay.
Because it was like V and then that's 2. Like you have 2 fingers up.
I was remembering also the horns. Like they've got 2 horns.
Yeah.
We come up with these dumb mnemonics. Yeah.
Before we put down Buffalo Bills every time. And
right.
Then every time we get it wrong and we can't remember what it is. Now we have these mnemonics.
Well, we should be careful with the horns because Buffalo also have horns.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
That's true. That's
V,
a good point.
V not for victory.
That's
better.
Viking.
Yeah. That's better. That's better.
Like, and when it's really stupid, we'll be like, oh yeah, we had a stupid thing for it. What was it? And then it's like,
trying to remember the mnemonic.
That helps. Like, you know.
All right. He was the first president to have been born a United States citizen.
Oh gosh. I think it's Van Buren. Isn't this the one?
Oh.
He was either the first born as a citizen or the last not born as a citizen. No, I think that's what it was.
Wait, was it how early was he? He was kind of.
He was. I feel like he was 8, maybe. Would that be about right? About long enough to have been born.
Sure.
I'm so unsure of myself.
Okay. Van Buren.
Final answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
McKinley. What is it?
You are correct. It is Martin Van Buren.
Van Buren.
Oh. Okay. But you're doubting yourself.
Yeah, I'm so doubting myself.
Was
All
he
right.
the last or?
I knew he was like on one side of that divider.
Yeah.
Next question. What nation governs the island of Cyprus?
Was that Greece?
Is it Greece or is it Turkey? Is it?
Greece.
I think it's Greece. Yeah. Okay. Greece.
Incorrect.
Turkey.
Oh, wait. Is it 50-50?
Incorrect.
Mm.
It is actually Cyprus. Cyprus is its own nation.
Oh.
That is a trick
That's
question.
A dirty trick, Karen.
What company is considered the first fast food restaurant in America? And it began franchising in 1921.
We have talked about this. Was it A&W? Was that the one?
I thought it might be.
It was like, cause I think all the, like Soda all Fountain. The classic, like McDonald's and it's Carl, 50. Those were all from like the 40s, 50s. Yeah. I don't know.
Not Wendy's.
Let's go with A&W.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Is it A&W?
Correct. It is A&W. Yeah. Guys, remembered. All right. Last question. The thistle has been the national emblem of what country?
Oh.
Isn't it Scotland?
I think that's right. I think that's what it was.
Is it Scotland?
Final answer, Scotland?
Yeah, I agree with Dana.
Correct. It is Scotland.
It's like either Scotland or Wales.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Wales is daffodil.
Oh.
I remember, yeah. Because we got burned by that once, too. I'm never going to forget that. Like, yeah, we get a lot of country flower questions and emblems. I mean, that's a very good, you know, source of trivia fodder. All right, good job, brains. And that's our show. Thank you guys for joining me. Thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot of weird stuff today about pee tattoos and elbow surgery and plastic surgery and the mimic octopus.
That is cool. I need to go YouTube that.
Mm-hmm. You can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and our website, goodjobbrain.com. Check out our sponsor, Audible, at audiblepodcast.com/goodjobbrain. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
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 Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.